At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
Down to business with Bobby Kerr. Brought to you by Bank of Ireland on News Talk.
So, just to say that I arrived into town, I knew Enniscorthy many years ago, hadn't been in it for years, and rocked in about 3 o'clock yesterday and rambled around the town, saw lots of interesting things which we'll be reporting back on later. But this is a beautiful part of the world. We're down here in the sunny southeast. The sun is up this morning. We're looking out right across the Slaney Valley here and the River Slaney, and I'm really, really excited about it. But first, we're going to have a look at the business and front pages making this morning's papers. I'm delighted to be joined by Dara Clifford. He's the group editor of People Newspapers. And also joining us is Anne Power of Powerhouse PR. Good morning to you both.
Good morning, Bobby.
Anne, we might start with you. A piece that caught my eye in this morning's Indo by Aideen O'Connell, that the budget has intensified the burden on small businesses grappling with soaring costs.
Yeah, Aideen has a great story here, and she quotes a cafe in Enniscorthy, which is, I think that was in your head earlier.
That's it.
We're in Enniscorthy. And there's plenty of gorgeous cafes and shops here in Enniscorthy as well. And I think across the country, all of those small business owners are feeling the pinch, especially following the finance bill, which is being rolled out now, and the increase in PRSI, employer's tax. There's new VAT categories as well. I don't know if people are aware yet, but freshly derived juices, etc., are now going to, they're zero VAT currently, but from January they're going to have VAT applied.
I think the sort of the underlying point of her story was that, you know, we're grappling with this, I suppose, dichotomy of, you know, zero employment, buoyant tax receipts, yet small businesses can't make ends meet.
They're feeling the pinch.
So that, which seems kind of bizarre in the backdrop of what's been suggested. I don't know what you thought about this, Dara.
Yeah, and I think it's interesting from a government point of view in that pre-budget, all the talk was that this is going to be the greatest giveaway budget ever, and that as night follows day, the budget will be announced, it will be amazing, and then an election will follow. They've been genuinely shocked at the reaction of this budget, but it had been well flagged with SMEs, and particularly in the hospitality industry, they were not happy, and they were making these points for the last year that they needed help with cost of business, and they genuinely dropped the ball here. I found it amazing, and the good thing about Aideen's piece is that she puts as Anne points out, she puts a human face to this, and the reaction of Peter Norton of Poppy's Cafe in Enniscorthy is echoed right around the country in small towns, where he says from VAT to wages to PRSI, all the increases introduced eat into the margins. And he says he talks about having to put up our prices, and he was fearful that people would assume that they would be grabbing for more cash, but when in reality, for him, it was the only viable way to keep his shop door open.
Yeah.
And there's business owners, small business owners can attest to that around Ireland.
I agree with nearly everything he says. There's one thing he says that I don't quite agree with. He says that the policies seem to favour large corporates with deep pockets, while local businesses are left grappling with higher costs and insufficient relief. I know that any of the corporates, any of the chains, they also have the wage increases, you know, and they'll make a decision, you know, somewhere not in these parts, some guy with a red pen will just say, close those 20 shops in Ireland. So they're not immune from it either.
No, they're not. I mean, we'll talk about some other stories about kind of more larger corporates who are doing quite well. But the big difference there is one element would be buying power. The buying power of a large company can succumb so many of the other costs. They can just take a hit on the cost of business. A slight increase of 80 cents on the minimum wage, they can take that hit when their margins are so much greater on the product they're selling.
Totally. They have the economy of scale and they can buy in, you know, their supplier costs are so much lower. I think the message here is for everyone to really, and we're going into a festive shopping period, let's face it, where we really need to think about supporting our own communities and seeking out those independent cafes and retailers and spending our money locally. They have the control to spend that money locally again and therefore boost the circular economy.
Yeah, okay, well, I just think it's a really, and it's a real human story because it reflects places, as you say, right across Ireland, and these people trying to make ends meet, trying to not increase their prices and just trying to make a livelihood. We'll move on then to, as we say, we talked about corporates. Profits are up at River Island, up 65% to 7.29 million. Which is, again, good news, Anne.
This is really significant because they're talking about the Irish branch, not just the UK, which you'd assume, you know, they might be because they are a UK-based company. But they increased their profits here in Ireland to 65% last year and 45% the year before.
And they have 23 shops here.
That's correct, yeah. And they have a UK loss of 39.4 million. So by contrast, it's fast. So
two other interesting things from the just looking at the data here, the sales were down 10% in the Irish operation. They're down nearly 20% in the UK. One would, and again, it just shows how multinationals work. But, you know, you look at these results, you say, that's brilliant. A company here making 7.29 million, employing 545 people. And then you look at the holding company with 33 million of a loss. And, you know, that's where the decision could be made relative to the Irish market.
Hugely. It could have a massive impact on us. And even though they are hugely profitable here in Ireland, we have seen this before with the likes of the holding company of Topshop and Wallace, where they've pulled. And that's had a massive knock-on effect on Irish retail.
Any thoughts on this one, Dara?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that, you know, the difference between Ireland and England, as you say, again, the overall company, the picture is not as rosy. And when a brand maybe like River Island may end up pulling out, not based on the performance of Ireland, but based on their overall results. And that, even though we are, and as Anne rightly points out, we're coming into a festive shopping period, and to be able to shop local is so important. But when a River Island or a Topshop, when these people, if they pull out of a town, that can have a detrimental effect because they are large employers and they do drag people into a town.
Yeah, and as I said, 23 stores. Another stat in this story that caught my eye was of the total of their staff of 540 people, 373 of them are part-time and 150 are full-time. That, I think, again, tells you something about the way these businesses are operating, that there's nearly, you know, twice as many part-timers as full-timers, which wouldn't have been the traditional way.
No, it wouldn't. I mean, it is clear then you have a lot of people on, I mean, you hear a lot of talk about kind of zero-hour contracts, but you would have people on, you know, and from a cost point of view for these multinationals, it makes sense to them. It's not ideal for the staff if you're on kind of shorter hours, but it's it is interesting to see that it should be the other way around.
Yeah, and just staying with retail, there's another retailer, Next, the Irish arm, Next Retail Ireland, their profits are also up 53%, and they also have 23 Irish stores. So similar store numbers here. The numbers aren't as big, but another common denominator with these in the River Island is that sales were down.
Yeah, and I think I'm a shopper in Next, and I noticed something that has changed there in the last year, and that is they have a huge number of other brands now under their umbrella. So you go onto Next and you can buy Reese, you can buy Jojo Babeb, you can buy...
So it's a concession income.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And they've kind of changed how they're operating business. I wonder if that is a rationale. They also do home furnishings, and I think even looking out the window, there's a house being built across the road. There's so much home change in Ireland since the pandemic.
Yeah. Interesting business, 800 stores in the UK and Ireland. So, but also interesting, 8 million customers online.
Yeah, and I think that is the key. I mean, it's an extraordinary number of a footprint from a retail point of view, but... And you will see this, again, right across Ireland, the retailers that are surviving and thriving are the ones that can balance not just the footfall coming through their shop door, but that they can make an imprint online. And Next are masters at online shopping. I know that from my wife at home, who absolutely loves going
they
online.
Make it easy.
Very easy.
It's
so easy.
They
you know, so
easy.
That, but that is the key. I mean, if you can, that is the trick. I think if you're a small retailer, if you can find a way of making your business work online to complement your shop front.
Yeah, it's another income stream.
It is.
And it's absolutely essential. What have you there, Dara? Commercial property showing signs of life. The commercial property sector has really been in the doldrums for the last number of years, hugely impacted by people working from home, difference in how we actually work. But there does seem to be a little bit of life, because I think in just like this building that we're in here, mm-hmm. A zero energy building, all the sort of high-end tech companies are looking for office accommodation mm-hmm. that is zero impact, low energy or no energy.
Yeah.
So there's movement in that sector, but they all move from other offices. That is really where the problem is, in the middle tier.
I found the story quite surprising, actually. I was a bit surprised when you rightly said, I mean, there's so much talk about working from home and retail, commercial property under pressure. I mean, I'd love to know who are the companies buying this property. I know it says the 600 million invested in Irish property over the last few months. Myself and I were talking off air beforehand, we're saying it might seem a lot, but is it really? Is 600 million and it's probably coming from a very low base of the last couple of years that there is an improvement. I think an awful lot more has to be done before we're in a situation where we think, yes, that the commercial property market is really on the bounce. And it makes the piece makes a very good point that for that to happen, it's largely dependent on borrowing costs coming down,
yeah.
You know, and that is the key.
So it runs in tandem with the interest rates.
Yeah.
Another business story, Anne, Smith's Toys. I don't know if you've done your Christmas shopping, but this business, again, Mayo-based business, turnover of over €1 billion. Some business, this.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible Irish business. I think Santa's been very busy in September. I think September is always the month that Santa's been very busy. But Smith's Toys, the numbers here are staggering. Profits of, what is it?
18.4 million.
Yes, yeah. Huge. And right across the country, we were talking about this. There's Smiths nearly in every town or county,
yeah.
Certainly in the country, and they're now expanding into Europe from three brothers in Mayo. It's incredibly successful.
I think there's more than three. And they're very down low, below the radar.
Mm.
You don't see many business profile interviews, but this is a business that's doing something. They're in Germany, they're in Holland, employing 3,500 people in the UK. Amazing business, and good luck to them.
Dara, I think, has some history in
the toy business. Yeah. Look, I mean, I kind of know the toy business myself. Kind of my dad would have been in the toy business years ago,
right?
Through Toymaster. So we would have kind of seen the growth of Smith's, you know, and it is extraordinary how they started from a small shop in Galway to where they are now and have well over 100 retail outlets across Europe alone, continental Europe, let alone UK and Ireland. But again, it comes back to buying power. The toy business, it's a tight margin business. And when they can buy in such bulk, it makes such a difference. But, you know, we still need that small independent trader.
Of course we do.
In rural towns that know their customers so well, that know that when they
yeah.
come in to the shop, that, these are, you know, kids you may have grown up with, and you know the family, and that counts for an awful lot in small Irish towns.
It's a huge difference, because we had a little chat about this off air before we came on, and there's a Toymaster shop in Dungarvan in County Waterford, and it has the largest selection of agri toy vehicles I have seen in my life. My little fella loves it. And that's really buying for their customer. They know the base, they know the families.
Tractors and
what
trailers.
What
about, I don't know what your view is on, but Harry McGee is a very interesting piece in today's Irish Times. Can candidates reconcile celebrity with the parish pump? And again, the parish pump, referring to Tip O'Neill's famous quote, "All politics is local." But there's an interesting analysis by Harry McGee of all the celebrity candidates, the new ones that we have, Grainne Shoiga, etc. plus some of the ones that we've had before. I don't know what you made of the story.
I thought Harry did a great job on this and talked about many of the politicians we've seen down through the years that have come from different guises or previous careers, you know, be it broadcasting or otherwise, or GA, as traditionally it would be in Ireland. But he talks in particular about Gráinne Seoighe and an interview she did on Radio na Gaeltacht, one that he describes as her having survived but not unscathed.
Yeah, because she disagreed with what Éamon O'Caoimh
said,
and he would have been I don't know, that's a view, but I don't know did it cause that much damage.
No, I wouldn't think so. Not, she's a long road to go yet, right? But I do think an important point is, you know, keeping one foot in the camp and one foot locally. And, you know, those are the people that are going to go out and vote for her.
Well, he refers to Dick Spring, who took his eye off the ball in Tralee back whenever it was and scraped in by four votes when he was the Taoiseach.
Indeed.
And that's remembered. Do you remember George Lee? Okay. Highest first preference votes in any constituency, I think. And he lasted however long he lasted.
I think in general, though, you talk about, and I hate the term celebrity candidate, but they tend to work better in by-elections and in European elections. I think in a general election, it's not as easy for them. I think the electorate are a lot smarter than that, and I think Gráinne, she might have made a bit of an amateur mistake. She learned from it. She probably does have enough of a profile, and the fact that she is a true and true Gaelgore running in Connemara will stand to her.
We'll ask Ivan Yates later when the election's going to be, so we'll find out a bit more then. Just very quickly and finally, Anne, tips are for tipping, cash or card, where the money really goes. A nice piece by Katie McGuinness in today's review section of the Irish Independent. It's a complex world, that whole place of tipping. Mm-hmm. It works different in different jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. We seem to have a blend of what happens in America, the UK, etc., all here. And sometimes it's very opaque.
It can be very opaque, and I think that's the point Katie's trying to make. And I think the change in the taxation around it there a couple of years ago made it even more difficult to navigate for the consumer, because while you want to support your server or the service provided, you want to do it in the right way.
Yeah.
But the cash card thing also makes it difficult.
It does.
Because COVID made us all quite cashless, isn't ideal.
Yeah, we've all been there where we've gone to a restaurant post-pandemic and with no cash, it's all card. And then we go, oh no, you know, what about the tip? And I've been that soldier sent out in the rain to look for an ATM to try and get money out. And then the ATM is only giving €50 out. And these are the modern first world problems. But it is. But it's interesting what Katie says as well, just from a staff point of view. All front of house staff that she asked told her that given the choice, they would prefer tips in cash.
Yeah,
rather than on
card. Of course
they
would.
Yeah.
Very interesting. She finishes with a story about going to collect a pizza that cost €140, and she was presented with the €140 bill with a prompt to add on a 15% gratuity. And
I tell you, it must have been some four pizzas for €140, I tell you.
Must have been in D4, but we're not in D4. No. We're in an Escorti. A big thanks to my guests, Dara Clifford and Anne Power.
Thank you, Robert.
Down to Business with Bobby Kerr.
Brought to you by Bank of Ireland.
Saturday morning at 11 on News Talk.